Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 32, the Iago Falque episode. And who I think it was, what, a preseason family? Do I want to say the Berlusconi tournament that they had years ago? Sam, your memory is a whole lot better than mine, where Falque's jersey was so screwed up they basically had to tape his jersey name because they misspelled it. Is that right? Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
I remember we had fun with it on the offside, Chuck. So maybe you can channel those memories of over a decade ago.
I'm digging deep into my memory, but I can't recall.
I mean, that Berlusconi trophy was like the 45 minute games between the big three.
Yeah. And it's fitting that we mentioned Berlusconi and the Berlusconi trophy because Juventus just had some very good things happen at the San Siro. So let me first bring in the usual group of Sam Lopresti. Hello, Sam.
I'm a little disappointed it wasn't Alessandro Matri.
Well, I was going to say, if we're going simply on good looks, it's definitely Alessandro Matri.
Yeah, that hair. Oh, man. I know I said it when you said Borriello, but like between him and Borriello, that 11-12 team just had great hair.
Very, very good hair.
And just between that, like Claudio Marchisio, just the attractiveness of that team. So huge.
Very strong cheekbones for those guys. So we got Chucks. Hello, Chucks.
Hello, hello. And that was a very nice segue, by the way. How you went from like Berlusconi, like...
Finally, 30 something episodes in, I finally figured out how the hell to do this thing. And we've got Sergio Romero. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. Happy to be here, as always. Yeah, I mean, we're getting better. We're getting better at everything, I would say.
A little
the
less
podcast,
worse.
The team, everything. Overall, improving.
Hopefully, like the team, we find some consistency. Speaking of which, Juventus, we are recording on Thursday, the day after Juve's, I think it's pretty safe to say, their biggest domestic win of the season, a 3-1 triumph over Milan in Milan. And I think the biggest thing coming out of it is that 2021 has started a whole lot better than 2020 ended, at least for Juventus on the field. There's a whole lot of things going on off the field, but we'll throw it to, since I just got done reading the grab bag a little while ago, Sergio, your thoughts on Juventus's big win and how nice is it to see Federico Chiesa playing on his much more natural right wing position?
It's really nice. It's really good. I mean, it's surprising how different a guy he is when he actually plays where he's supposed to play. It's a shocker, I know, but it's just, he's a completely different player. He's a completely different guy. I mean, you can definitely see why they splashed the big bucks on him when he actually plays on the right. And obviously this was kind of like one of those things that, I mean, you know, more of a force majeure type of thing than anything else, because Juan Cuadrado has been really good there this season. But I don't know, man, like if he keeps playing like this, I think he might take Johnny Square's job, because he just brings something else to the table that I don't know how many guys on the team in general have that that ability to just take a guy one-on-one and just beat the guy one-on-one and have that the awareness, the stamina to kind of like do those runs that not a lot of guys on the team have. So I was just really, really happy to see him finally have this type of breakout game that we all wanted him to have. Even the skeptics among us about the signing really wanted him to finally have that breakout game. And what a moment to have it. I mean, just in the most must-win game of the season so far, at least domestically, you know, he definitely put out there. He put on a show, man. I was really, really happy to see it.
Yeah, I mean, he was great. I mean, he was just like really, really direct. I think that's something we probably mentioned that early in the season. I think I'd said something about like how the composition of our wingers now is just very, very direct. I mean, you have Chiesa, and especially I think I pointed out Kulusevski specifically in that mold. For him, more because of his physicality and just, I mean, he's a big guy and, you know, great assist, of course, yesterday as well. But yeah, he's just a big guy, pretty fast and more of a counter-attacking player. Although I do have to say I'm a little surprised how that he's tailed off a little bit in the last few weeks, but, you know, still makes an impact off the bench. But yeah, Chiesa, I mean, he, especially his second goal, I mean, there was so little space to make that shot. I mean, and Taylor Hernandez, I mean, he's an excellent, excellent left back. And I mean, Chiesa made him look, well, I don't want to say ordinary, but I mean, he really, really gave him a tough time. And I mean, that's just all credit to Chiesa on that one. And yeah, like Sergio said, wow, isn't it surprising what happens when you play players in their correct positions?
Not to interrupt you, Tricks, but you mentioned just the small window that Chiesa had to fit that shot through. I mean, they had, after he scored, they had the slow-mo replay. And I mentioned in my post-game thread that just you saw the two defenders' feet trying to block it and they're coming through. And then you just see the ball just slowly working its way through. And I mean, if there had to be at most just a couple inches either side of it, because I mean, it was about as perfectly placed of a shot in terms of getting through that window as he could have gotten it. So, I mean, the first goal was great, both in terms of what he and Dybala did in terms of the combination, but yeah, that third goal, just the combination of everything and then to be topped off by that was really, really pretty good to see.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing really with very direct players like that. It's, they just have to make a decision. Like they have to do it, you know. He just took a touch and then he just shot. Like he didn't, you know, he didn't have the time in that situation to like, you know, kind of halfway think this, halfway think that. Like you just have, like you just do make that decision. And I mean, you know, sometimes it doesn't work. I think a lot of people had frustrations with Chiesa in prior games, in which I remember I kept reading in the comments like, oh, he just keeps dribbling with his head down, which I mean, I don't know. You know,
he's guilty of it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, fair enough. I mean, yes, that does happen. But, you know, this showed the other side of the coin where that can work. And I didn't even think he was dribbling with his head down. He's just, or today anyway, or yesterday, I should say. But he just took Taylor Hernandez on. And like Pirlo was saying in the post-match comments, like that his intention was really to pin back Taylor Hernandez, to not let him, you know, be offensively on the front foot, and clearly that worked. So, you know, long live Chiesa.
Yeah, I think that was one of one of a couple really good tactical decisions that Pirlo made. I mean, I think had Juan Cuadrado been available, Cuadrado's qualities would have been able to potentially do the same thing and keep Teo Hernandez pinned back. And Teo, I mean, he is one of the best left backs probably in the world, because I mean, you have to look at, I mean, really good fullbacks are very, very difficult to come by, and just due to the dearth of that, you know, of those, I think Hernandez really should be considered one of the top maybe 10 left backs in the world, if not more. And I'm gonna go where you didn't, Chuck. So I'm gonna say he looked ordinary. He looked, I mean, on a couple of those plays that Chiesa made, he looked downright silly. But yeah, Chiesa has really, really come alive these last couple of weeks, you know, getting him onto the right side, obviously a big thing. That's going to now be a really big question as to whether or not he and Cuadrado start there. It'll probably come down to game situation, you know, what what Pirlo might need out of that position at any given time. Apart from Chiesa, though, I wanted, and Sergio, you mentioned this in the grab bag as well, the Paulo Dybala looked night and day different from the guy that we were seeing in November and December this year. I mean, Sergio, you said it. I've said it. I said this a lot last season. I know I typed these words a lot last season, but Paulo Dybala is the kind of player that you know how confident he is just by looking at him. And he, you know, early this season, as he was getting his feet back from, you know, that really bad thigh injury, and then he started getting all these weird illnesses, he was not a confident player, and you could just tell by the way he was looking. Yesterday, that was back. Like the kind of guy that would take the shot from, you know, a 2-degree angle against Jan Oblak was there. I agree with you totally, Sergio, when you said that the pass that he made for Chiesa's first goal, I don't think he makes that 2 months ago, because I just don't think he had it in his head. But I think he's starting to get back. He's starting to believe in himself again. You start getting Paulo Dybala playing like this, playing the way he did today, or yesterday rather, in this game, along with Ronaldo, along with Morata, the way Morata's been playing this season, you put him in with another, you know, any of the plethora of backup number nines that we're starting to get linked to. Shame that Quagliarella is not going to happen. That would have been fun. But that's going to be really dangerous. And I think just this whole, the whole end result of this game is, might the psychological effect that this game might have on the rest of Serie A could be really real. Because, you know, here you are with Juventus. They just, you know, we had humiliated ourselves against Fiorentina to end the year. We're really in dire straits. We come back, we win this game in Milan. And this was not a game that we eked by. Like, was it a perfect performance? No. Did Juventus absolutely deserve to win the game? Yes. And you know that, like in a cartoon, when a cartoon character gets nervous and you get that really outlandish cartoon gulp sound coming out of one of them. I think that sound is coming out of everybody in Serie A right now, because if they came out and managed a performance like that in a game this big, that to me says that something is starting to click. And I think the rest of the league is going to be really, really is going to start walking on eggshells a little bit again. I think the fear factor, it's certainly not there yet, but by the end of this, you know, if in the next 5 or 6 weeks, we start playing like this every single day, that fear factor is going to come back quick.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely share the optimism just of the victory and the fact that, you know, other teams will see, okay, they being Juventus still have it in them, or that we still have it in us to turn it on. But I mean, I'm still a little concerned, as I said in the before we started recording. So the main reason I'm kind of concerned, sort of twofold things, but first of all, I think that, you know, despite the victory, I would say that Milan still dominated for like a good 30 to 40 minutes of yesterday's game. I mean, I think it was the first 20 minutes I thought we were well on top and scored the goal. I mean, the rest of the first half, I feel like we didn't really play for the rest of the first half. And then, you know, of course, the equalizer happened with all the craziness of that equalizer. And then second half, things were a little more stable. But I mean, I don't know. I still feel like Milan created a lot of chances. And shout out to Fefu for digging up the numbers on this one. But so we faced 20 shots of Milan. 20 shots and 8 shots on target, which is apparently a record for this season. Barcelona managed 7 on target in the second match, actually, curiously. But I agree with Fefu in the sense that that's way too much. That's, you know, that's, I mean, okay, I do agree. A bunch of them were like Hakan Çalhanoğlu, kind of spraying and praying, as we would say in Halo and Call of Duty.
Yeah.
He was kind of spraying and praying.
I was going to say a little bit of that, but also, like, I mean, yeah, were there times where Milan was clearly on top? in terms of game control or at least possession, if not game control. Cause I really, I wouldn't say that the game was ever out of control for Juve, even though we weren't exactly playing very, you know, even though Milan had the most of the ball for the last 15 minutes or so of the first half, but that's what happens against good, like in games against good teams, you're never going to be dominating the entire game. And as much as the last 10 years have kind of trained us to think of them as a joke, this Milan is a good team. And they've proven that by going on this run that we just ended yesterday, the last phase of which has come under a serious depth crunch. So like while I certainly agree that you want to see, you know, you want to see, you don't like seeing, you know, like what we saw at the end of the first half where, you know, Milan pretty much had everything. It's that's you'll get those periods against a good team. And as much as we have been trained to see them as kind of a joke the last, you know, for a while, I think Milan are starting to graduate back out of that category of teams that Juventus should beat, full stop. They're coming up and being very competitive. And I think that I just think that those are the kinds of things that you're going to get when you're playing a decent team.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree that, like, you know, Milan are quality side, but I mean, they were missing a good 50, 60% of their team last night. I mean, they're playing,
ungodly. I don't know how the hell.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they're playing a fullback in central midfield, you know. I mean, they were just, I mean, decimated in mostly in attack and, I mean, midfield as well. But, you know, their squad was decimated. And even still, they managed to put us really, I mean, much under the cosh for, like, you know, a good 30 to 40 minutes. So that, I mean, that is just kind of the main concern for me is, like, you know, I kind of fear what would have happened if they were full strength, you know.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Juventus has been playing a winger as a fullback for a better part of a year and a half. So, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know, voluntarily or involuntarily.
Well, I mean, we've mentioned how many shots Juve has faced, but we haven't mentioned the guy who stopped the shots. And I know that there has been a lot of chatter, at least on our comment section and in our blog Twitter account, the mentions. Especially in the as the man who mans that Twitter account, the 48 hours or so leading up to the Milan game, where people are starting this notion where Wojciech Szczęsny is not good enough to play in big games. Well, Wednesday was a big game, and Szczęsny, outside of Chiesa, was probably Juventus's best player on the field. And I mean, I feel like, you know, 5 out of 7 stops he had were really good saves at the very least. So hopefully it silenced the notion that Szczęsny is a guy who can lead this team, lead the defense, especially in these bigger games, even though, you know, Buffon is still very much Buffon in the sense that he can have those commanding type of goalkeeping performances if needed, I should say.
And I find it a little bit ironic that he put in a performance like that when I had a WhatsApp chat that I am in, had a full-on verbal war with several of my friends over them advocating the signing of Gianluigi Donnarumma to replace Szczęsny. And then he goes and just completely outperforms Donnarumma on all. I mean, it wasn't that Donnarumma was bad. None of the Juve goals, I would say, would be Donnarumma's fault per se.
No, but it wasn't one of those games where Donnarumma cost Milan like we've seen against Juventus.
Yeah, no, it wasn't. But that's the thing. But the thing is that we are talking. There are still those games for Donnarumma. I mean, just earlier this year, Donnarumma was in a penalty shootout in the Europa League playoff round and parried a penalty into his own net, which was ridiculous, and had a couple of Milan fan friends of mine taking a couple of shots before the next penalty kick was taken. But, you know, Donnarumma, he's a good shot stopper. He's a very good goalkeeper. I don't necessarily think he's all that he is cracked up to be. You know, I was covering AC Milan for Bleacher Report the year that Sinisa Mihailovic gave him his debut. And I see really the same player that I saw when he was 17. And that scares me. I mean, yes, goalkeepers are supposed to age, are supposed to mature later than an outfield player. But going from a five-year period of really not developing all that much, in my opinion, it doesn't make me think, it certainly doesn't justify the idea of spending what would be a lot of wage money, because this is a Mino Raiola client here. It would be spending a lot of wage money on a position that is not a need right now, because Chesney is more than enough at goalkeeper. And given the other problems that this team has, need for another midfielder, need for about six fullbacks, that's just not spending money to be replacing Chesney is not a thing that needs to be done right now.
Indeed. And I'll bring Sergio back in on this one, since he talked about it as well in his grab bag, as the grab bag is now serving as basically my pre-pod recording prep for everything. Just the fact that, you know, Pirlo is obviously learning on the job each week. And I've said it before, this, because of the situation being what it is, it's very much kind of a week to week kind of season, more so than before. But how much has Pirlo impressed you these first couple games of 2021? And, you know, we mentioned it before, hopefully the consistency can breed out of it, huh?
Yeah, I'm not, you know, quite there to really call it a win yet. Like, we're definitely, you know, we turned a corner, but it's been noticeably better. Like Chuck's alluded to, at first, there were definitely some moments in the Milan game and even the Udinese game, which, you know, were a little bit, you know, they kind of give possession a lot. And that is a very stylistic type of thing. I don't really like, you know, going one goal ahead or two and then just immediately going back and defending the lead. That's not something I particularly enjoy. But it's definitely something that you can tell that it is kind of like what Andrea Pirlo wants to do. And we saw it in the Milan game. Like, they went ahead and they immediately went back to kind of like take that pressure. And it was actually like, I saw that as when I play FIFA and I'm facing like a high press and I'm just throwing through passes and I'm like, one of this is going to hit and it's going to be a goal. And that's what's going to happen. And that was kind of where Juventus was for those 20, 30 minutes that Chuck's mentioned. They were trying to kind of get one of those breakaways, kind of like do that counter that kind of finished the game. And to Pirlo's credit, they did. Like, when once the, you know, the game got leveled and they went ahead on Chiesa's second goal, they kind of pretty much did the same thing that the first half. They allowed Milan to have more possession. They kind of started defending and brought Kulusevski and McKennie in. And that's what they did. Like, they got a counterattack and Kulusevski, you know, beat his guy one-on-one. And that was it. Like, that is kind of like the game Pirlo wants to play when he goes ahead. And I think he did it right. I think he did it well. I think we're starting to see a little bit more of the good things in Andrea Pirlo's, you know, kind of like scheme, but also the bad things. And I think that's a lot of, you know, what we saw with, you know, the massive amount of shots that they received. A lot of them, like Chuck said, like Sam said, they were just kind of like, you know, outside of the box prayers. But they are finding those shots because the transition movement from attacking to defense still, like, there's still a lot that can be improved in that regard, I think, because they are finding those pockets in transition. They are finding those chances of getting clean shots out. And most of the time, those are not going to be dangerous, but, you know, one of those two are going to be good shots and, you know, Chesney's going to have to parry them out or something. And maybe there's a bounce and that's a score, right? So I think the good things are definitely coming through. I think the team is improving. I think the team is playing better. I think people now are more aware of where they should be on the field, of what they should be doing when they are there. And I think that's, you know, definitely good to see. But at the same time, I agree with Chucks in the sense that there's still, you know, the fact that the opposing team is just one dispossession in the midfield from having a clear counterattack chance like we saw against Milan, it's still a little bit worrisome, because that is going to happen against any team. Like, that is, like, you cannot ask the midfielders to never lose the ball. So I think that's still a problem. I think that still needs tweaking. But overall, I'm liking what I'm seeing from 2021 Juventus. I hope that, you know, this is their New Year's resolution type of stuff. Just like be better, like just be a good football team. And so far they've been definitely doing it. So I'm happy with that so far.
That's the Occam's razor of New Year's resolutions. The simplest.
Be better. It's so simple.
Be better.
Like play well and score goals. That's not that hard.
Thanks, Michael Owen. Can I actually, before we move on, can I add one more thing?
Of course, Chucks.
Because thank you, Supreme Overlord, Mr. Penza. Because, you know, even though, like, we conceded all those shots and I raised that point of just letting Milan dominate a large part of the game, somewhat paradoxically, I mean, we still have the joint best defense in the league. I'm just looking at the standings now, and we are tied best defense with Napoli and, drumroll please, Hellas Verona. They have also conceded, these three teams have conceded 15 goals in, 15, well, for us, 15 matches, Napoli, 15 matches, Verona, 16. So, you know, quite remarkably, we're still the best defense. And also, kind of interestingly, we have the exact same record as Napoli, both teams, 32 goals scored and 15 conceded. So, bit of a paradox there.
Napoli losing that game on Wednesday was just such a, that might have also been a shot in the arm for the guys heading into the stadium, realizing we can get into the top four if we do this now. Because, you know, with Inter going down, with Napoli going down, winning that game was such a huge thing just on its own to stay within shouting distance of Milan, but to all of a sudden put yourself back into the top four. And, you know, whenever the Napoli game is rescheduled, assume that no more ground is gained between now and then, you win that game, you're 4 points off the lead. I mean, obviously that game's probably not going to be played for months, but, you know, you're right back into the thick of things now. And they saw the opportunity there and really, really just went with it. It was a little bit like the older teams from the streak where the opportunity presented themselves, and man, would they just ruthlessly take it. And I think that was a lot very similar this time.
Yeah. And I'm happy you brought that up, because I do think that, and I mentioned it in the latest grab back, that for as much as we have kind of like doubted this team and doubted Andrea Pirlo, and for a lot of times with good reason, the two biggest tests so far they faced, which is the Barcelona away and AC Milan away, just they have come through on both of those matchups, and they have done, you know, just they have had great performances. They have completely seized the moment, like Sam said. Like they have not played like they played against Crotone. Like they legit go out there and you can tell the mentality is different. You can tell they just go, I don't know if you're going to need to censor this, Danny, but they just go balls to the wall on every single play. And you can tell that this is something that they only put out for the best games. And this is not even just this Pirlo thing. It's like it happened in the last game, like with the, in the last couple Inter matchups of last season. It was the same thing. Like you could definitely see a change of intensity. And I do, that is what gives me the most hope in regards to the Pirlo era, that the biggest matches, the biggest tests, and they have gone and just passed them with flying colors. So it's going to be interesting, because as you all know, there's a lot of games that are going to have to be like that if they want to win the league this year. So it was just nice to see that they still have that extra gear that they can get to in big games.
Which is kind of ironic, because the first couple quote unquote big games of the year, they kind of flopped, didn't they? You look at, you know, the Roma game, that wasn't all that great. And then the first game against Barcelona, that obviously wasn't very good. So
yeah, definitely. I would categorize more the first Barcelona game. I think that was a big game that they kind of failed to show, but it was one of those things that it's so early in the season that you know, it's hard to count that like really as one of those make or break moments, just because it was so early. But yeah, I agree. I think that was the only game where they haven't really, you know, played well. But outside of that, I think every single big game, they have just found a way to come through, and that has to be encouraging if you're Andrea Pirlo and if you're a Juventus fan, for sure.
With the Roma game, you mentioned that, you know, that big game there. That's something we haven't mentioned, I mean, almost at all, really, the last month or two. AS Roma have been on really, really good form. I mean, they are third place. They're only 4 points off Milan, and they've just been in excellent form. I mean, the last few games, they only have three ties, one of them draws. One of them was against us, of course. And yeah, only three losses as well. And I mean, they've been in really good form. So honestly, that 2-2 is looking pretty good from match day two, was it, I think? Or match day three, perhaps.
But, yeah, match day two.
Match day two, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's looking like a pretty good result, actually, in hindsight.
Except when Roma plays the Juventus women, but that's another story. But
and before we move on, I just want to very quickly say, what's up with Milan fans, man? They had like half, not even half a season of good football. And they were already like, I mean, they were just talking so much crap. It's just wild to me that.
Yeah, I second that.
I mean, I know 10 years of like not winning anything. That's tough. But, you know, I mean, still, it's been less than half a season. Maybe like chill it for a bit before we start, you know, we start talking a ton of smack. And
yeah, like this point in the undefeated season, we were still talking about how we were drawing too much. Like these, like, From the end of October on, just the triumphal march of Milan fans has been hilarious to see.
So Sam mentioned it. I want to talk about it a little bit further before we kind of wrap this all in a bow and sign off. But just kind of the meaning of this result, because we had, I mean, it's wild to wake up in the morning when I do, and obviously games are on in the morning whenever Juventus play where I live, but just to kind of see how much had happened even before Juventus had took the field, because you had the Inter game, you had the Napoli game, and then you had everything going on with Milan off the field in terms of virus cases and all that stuff. So the win obviously put Juventus back in this place where the Scudetto is still a thing, or winning it is a thing, I should say, rather than being 13 points off the lead. But you look at now, Milan had a chance to get a comfortable distance between themselves and Inter. That didn't happen. And then Napoli could have, you know, jumped further closer to Milan. That didn't happen. And now Juventus was really kind of and Roma, I should say, as well, are kind of the big winners of the day, where all of this madness at the top of the table only made things a whole lot more closer, which, I mean, from our perspective is good, because we want to see Juventus just kind of chip away at that Milan lead atop the table. So what do you guys think about kind of just the day that was, and hopefully looking ahead to here these next couple of weeks, where the games are still very much big, and, you know, next weekend against Inter is the biggest of them all. So, you know, what are you guys thinking about kind of looking into the immediate future about kind of hopefully what this win means for Juventus?
I do think it's very interesting what you're saying, because like I said, like everything is very much up in the air. Not obviously, we focus more on Juve, you know, because this is a Juve podcast after all. But it is like this league is pretty wide open. Like it's anybody's league at this point. Like every team has a shot. Like you said, Roma has 33 points. Like that's nuts. Like sneakily out there, like really, really challenging for the title. Napoli, you know, a little bit down, but, you know, also has a game in hand, like Atalanta, so it's going to be chippy. Like, it's really one of the most interesting and I would say exciting, you know, league title races that we have seen so far. And considering where we were in December, where, you know, suddenly there was a point after the Fiorentina game where we were down 13, which was, like, insane. Now it's, like, down 7, game in hand. If you win out the month, there's a very real scenario in which you are within maybe 3 points, maybe two, maybe who knows, right? At that point, you depend on whatever Milan and Inter do. But if you win out the rest of the way, you're very much in the thick of things. And I just, I think that they definitely needed this. They definitely needed to see, you know, the top of the table, just like Sam alluded to earlier, just like psychologically, I think that's huge. Just to know that, like you said, if you win a couple of games, you're right in there. You're right in the middle of things. I think that's massive, just mentally for that locker room, It's just mathematically, because if they lost against Milan, like it'd be tough to make a case that they could still come back without, you know, bearing a massive, you know, choke job by Milan or something. But right now, as things stand, I mean, things are very much on their court for Juve. So I think it was a massive result for sure.
I think it's also it needs to be remembered. The early game on Sunday, the 10th, right before we play Sassuolo, which is the last game of the day there, is Roma-Inter. So we could be looking at, you know, at a scenario where we're gaining ground on one or both of them for second and third if we beat Sassuolo, which is, you know, just another, you know, I think that ends up kind of looming over that game as well. Like, you know, all of a sudden there's footsteps, and now whoever might lose between Inter and Roma in that game, that's a big, you know, that could end up really putting things out of up in the top four and really, you know, really just smushing things up even more. So it's, yeah, like Sergio said, this is going to be really wide open. But, you know, between that, Inter, you know, like I said, Inter, Roma, and then I think two rounds after that, the last round of the Andata is Milan versus Atalanta, which is going to be a really intriguing game and will also have a lot of implications as to, you know, what, you know, depending on where the standings are at that point, that could be that's a clear scenario where Milan could very conceivably lose points. It's, you know, a lot of people have said that Inter might be the favorites for the title this year, now that they don't have a European commitment, whereas all of the other teams that are in the chase do. But if they keep playing, you know, Juventus is used to that. And yeah, I think that psychologically, both for the people in the Juve locker room saying, you know, we just went in there and won this game, and like I said before, for the entire rest of the league, starting to suddenly hear footsteps. I mean, it does remind me a little bit of 15-16, when, you know, after Halloween, Juve started to, you know, we called it at the club the ugly goals period, where we would just be winning games on like fugly goals that would go off of somebody's thigh or like a dodgy penalty. And that's still a chant at Legends when we can get to Legends, when we could go to Legends, and when we will go to Legends again, was ugly goals. And you could see that the rest of the league just kind of looking and not being able to look away, that had an effect as that winning streak went on for Juve. I think the same thing could happen again. I'm not saying it's a lock to happen now, because this is only two games, even though the second one was a very important one. But if this keeps happening, that not again feeling could start coming in, and that'll just help Juve where, you know, if they keep on winning and keep on rolling.
Yeah. I mean, I think obviously huge 3 points, but the fact of the matter is it's still, I mean, January, it just so many big games, so much still to happen that, I mean, I can't really say anything, frankly, right now, because there's just, you know, there's still Sassuolo, Inter, and just all those other big games. But like Sam said early in the episode, I think the biggest takeaway from this game was psychological. It was such an important game psychologically. Had we lost, we would have been 13 points behind. I mean, that would have been hugely, like, symbolically, I mean, that would have just been so, I don't know. I mean, I don't know psychologically how we would have recovered from that. So I think more than anything, it was just a hugely, hugely necessary psychological boost that will be very necessary for, I mean, this just intense month of football.
And then February starts again, and Juventus, guess what? They've got a game against Roma. So the schedule is
and then the Champions League.
And then the Champions
League continues.
This schedule this year is it never slows down, does it? So Yeah, those who aren't playing in the Euros are very much going to earn their vacations this summer. So,
I mean, I'm just grateful we have such squad depth. I mean, the commentators were saying it yesterday as well. Like, I mean, even with, you know, injuries and obviously COVID and players being out of form, like, you know, Bentancur and Arthur still kind of, you know, taking his time to acclimatize, still we're able to bring on McKennie, who's been in excellent form, and Kulusevski, who's been, you know, on and off. I mean, strong start to the season, tailed off a little bit, but still, I mean, a super sub off the bench. So, I mean, that's frankly a huge privilege to have that.
Yeah, that was the difference in that game. The two differences in that game were Juve's depth and the fact that Juve were far more clinical. And that was the difference.
Absolutely, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's always nice when one of your best strikers gets hurt and then you can turn to Paulo Dybala. So on that note, we'll wrap things up here. I stupidly forgot to ask for Twitter questions this week, so we do not have any Twitter questions. I will remember next week. I'll schedule the tweet now. Anyways, as always, you can send us any Twitter questions at Juventus Nation on Twitter, at Black and White and Red All Over on Facebook. Same kind of thing on iTunes and Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, and on Spotify. Search Black and White and Red All Over all those places. Apple, iTunes, and Apple Podcasts. Feel free to rate, review, and write us a little blurb if you'd like. Tell us how nice Chucks is once his Zoom doesn't crash on him. So, for the aforementioned Chucks, for Sam, and for Sergio, this is Danny saying thank you very much for listening. Stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you guys next week.